This is a download from the BBC. To find out more, visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness such a fantastic thing. Please, please, for the Infinite Monkey Cage, please welcome Brian Cox and Robin Hicks with their guests. Yes,
that's not... This isn't very Radio 4, is it, to be honest?
Who's here for particle physics?
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that we need.
Quantum chromodynamics!
Oh, a lot more over that side. Yeah, that's quite interesting. Yeah.
Because we're at Glastonbury, we have erected a great rational tent. A solitary place within which the light of reason can burn safely amongst the smouldering rubble of the Enlightenment strewn across the muddy fields outside. My only worry is what they're going to do with that giant wicker Einstein that they're building out the front.
So, where better to discover science than balancing on a ley line? For this reason, Brian is wearing an azurite crystal, traditionally the crystal worn to enhance rationalism. So, today we ask, is there room for mysticism in a rational world? OK, we'll take a vote early on. Who says yes? Who says no? Wow, the elves are in.
Don't forget the wicker Einstein outside.
To help us come to some conclusion, we have our largest panel yet. We have four people. Despite supermarkets currently offering cut price kindness, this man still has a milk round delivering it, and so he should. He is the milkman of human kindness, but sometimes does confuse shooting stars for just bits of space debris. He is Billy Bragg.
Well, rock and roll and astronomy are closer than you might think. There once was a moon who drove his Rolls-Royce into a swimming pool. And our next guest went one better by crashing his song into the surface of Mars at high velocity on Beagle 2. Is there life on Mars? Not anymore, the hooligan. Is Graham Coxon.
Our next guest is a keen amateur scientist and uses her Twitter account to report reasonable scientific experiments such as three species of mammal have just jumped on my head and also my dog will eat deer poo, but not dog biscuits. We'll be investigating those ideas later on in the show. Keen amateur biologist, comedian Shappie Corsandy.
And finally, we thought we'd better have at least one science guest on, but they're hard to come by at Glastonbury, so we got a chemist. Next best, is a chemist in the house? No, one. Yeah. He's Professor of Physical Chemistry at Sheffield University, Professor Tony Ryan, and this is our panel.
I'm glad you asked if there was a chemist in the house, because a lot of these people aren't normally chemists, but over this weekend, it does... we'll start off... Billy, you've been here. I think you've done the most Glastonbury festivals of anyone on this panel. How true do you think it is that Glastonbury deserves this reputation of kind of, you know, mysticism and irrationalism and kind of, you know, the idea of naked hippies dancing at the dawn?
It's one of the few places you can still get away with that kind of stuff. But there is great science going on here. It's a well-known fact that there are so many people here at Glastonbury, their activities actually generate a condensing cloud over the site that rains continually.
Tony, no, to me, it took thousands of years and the Enlightenment and a great struggle to get us out of the fields and into warm places. What is it about human beings that brings them back into the field again every June?
So I have been thinking about this quite a bit, and I'm going to go home and make a lot of donations to refugee camps, because that's how it feels today. We're getting in touch with how hard it is to live in many parts of the world by being here.
Well, can you imagine what my family in Iran think of me coming to Glastonbury and living like this by choice? I was sitting thinking yesterday how amazing it is and unfathomable it is why so many of us, all of us, group together and come here every year to be entertained and have a good time. And people come here to feel good because everyone, from the moment you arrive, everyone's nice to you, everyone's nice to each other. And that, I think, comes from somewhere really honest that I can't explain through science or anything like that. But that's the part that I think we miss out on in the rest of our year. So when you say we came out of the field, I kind of think we need to get back in a very honest way and connect with people that we've never met before but feel like we want to make them happy.
Graham, you've done everything Glastonbury. You've headlined Glastonbury,
yeah.
but you come back and you discover the rest of the festival. I mean, yeah. Is there a big difference between the big sort of commercial pyramid stage stuff and then the stuff around here out on the edges?
Not really. I've noticed I've done a lot more walking now. I'm not headlining, and I've got a lot dirtier. And that's about it.
Less
the 4x4s are kind of swishing past and splashing me with mud. Whereas before, 2 years ago, I was in that 4x4.
Did Brian drive past in his 4x4? Because that's all he did for the whole of yesterday. He just went round and round and round, not stopping anyway, going, look at me, I've spilt some of my champagne. Feel my pain. Waving your telescope out the window at anyone. Nothing Freudian there.
I think one of the things we were talking about earlier is that, you know, what Shafi was talking about, great gatherings. You know, Stonehenge was built around the solstice, but also was a big excuse for a gathering. There is something going on here where there's a kind of nexus of getting together to get totally out of your head and early science. You know, in one of your programmes, there's this fabulous hill in Peru where they've got 12 or 13 mounds where they watch the sun go along and then turn around and come back again. They didn't just stand there with clipboards writing it down. They went there and they had a great big festival. And so the whole kind of like spiritual madness, muddy field stuff and the science kind of both seem to come from the same place.
Yeah, Tony, there's a good point there, isn't there? Because I often think that science, mysticism, religion, whichever way you want to look at it, they come from the same place. The first thing you have to do is notice there's something interesting about the world, and then you proceed from there.
And when you see the sun breaking through clouds and those great big shafts of light, you know, it's really obvious why people worship the sun.
Well, it's obvious why they used to. No, there's no excuse for it now, is there? Because we know that.
Oh, it's arrogant Brian Cox yet again.
Well, actually, Brian, I think there is, because we're going to need to keep worshipping the sun, because it's the sun that will get us out of all the problems we're currently in.
Yeah. I don't mean worship.
I mean use the power of the sun. Yeah. The power of the sun that comes to us every day that we currently ignore because we're too busy digging up buried sunshine as fossils.
Hey, 'cause I think that is what you were saying there is quite interesting, that idea of the where, because it has been described, Carl Sagan, wonderful Carl Sagan, said that really what science is informed worship. So we kind of make that leap. I mean, how do you feel, Shappy? You were saying before we went on air that you feel that you're kind of more mystic than rational.
I didn't say I'm more mystic than rational. I think I said something along the lines of whatever gets you through the night.
Then you said imagine. then you said something about a shaved fish.
What,
and it all got a bit weird.
What I find interesting about this, because I do sit between the two, but I find that it's extremely important to have a conversation with science, you know. But you if you use the wrong word or the wrong phrase, then the rationalists all dance around you, pointing their finger in your face and laughing, and that is fanaticism. Yeah. That's no different to religious fanaticism in my book, because it shuts down communication. And that's no good to anybody.
That sounds exactly like the Socialist Workers' Party, actually, now you mention that. They do exactly the same to me whenever I step off the path of righteousness.
But Graham, what was it that brought the band to the scientific community, I suppose, in terms of putting the music on Beagle 2? Why was it that you decided to do that?
We should explain, sorry, a little bit, just the background. Beagle 2 was Britain's mission to Mars, and Graham and Blur as a whole, you had a song on there which was going to be, well, the first song played on Mars, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was going to arrive there on wheels on a special sort of little thing, tractor of sorts, and beam the music back.
The use of a tractor to get there was probably the error that we made, actually, in hindsight.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know the proper term for it. I mean, Cosmo tractor, yeah. I don't know what it was called. But, you know, we made this sort of backing track that was sort of formed through mathematics, I think. I think it was Damon's father who was interested in patterns and mathematics, and he created this sort of pattern that we put to music, and I put loads of sort of heavy guitars on it,
like,
and I think
Paisley.
That's why it crashed. Paisley, not Paisley.
Oh.
See, I think so. I mean, did you feel, when you were working on something like that,
Did you feel, what Shappie was just saying, do you find that when you're in an environment with scientists, do you feel that you can't say anything? You know, Shappie sees these kind of images of dancing scientists, you know, pointing at people going, ah, you don't understand any equation.
I do take seriously anybody who talks about this kind of thing, as long as he's got a tweed jacket and a pipe. And then, you know, if it's anything else, then I don't
What
really
are you saying about
seriously.
Me, then? You don't listen to
Well,
me
I'm sure you've got a couple at home. A couple of pipes.
Get them out of an evening, yeah. Oh. But actually, we're talking there about the perceived mismatch between science and other ways of looking at the world. And a lot of people said to me, when you come into Glastonbury, they're like, you know, you are actually going to get put in the Wicker Einstein. And is that a necessary thing? Is it inevitable that if you start to try and work out the way that the world works by looking at it, carrying out experiments, using the scientific method, is the necessary conflict?
Well, it is if you are an extremist. I don't have a problem at all with atheism, but I do have a problem with the attitude of anybody who believes in something like a supreme being is stupid. I actually feel that, you know, religion, you know, if people get some comfort from it, that's fine, you know. And also, if you look at science, particularly if you look at science in the absolute maximum, and you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong here, but currently I understand that scientists believe that the universe is made up of 95% of dark stuff, which we can't see, sniff, touch or feel, but must be there according to your theories. So you're asking us to believe in something intangible and massive, that 95% of the universe is made up of intangibility.
Right, if I could just ask the rest of the panellists and myself... If we could just leave the stage and allow Billy and Brian to deal with this in their own method.
No, I mean the statement that 95% of the universe and 96% is made of something else is an observational statement. I mean, it's a baffling statement. It would have been far easier to understand the universe if that had not been the case, but it was observed to be true, so the universe doesn't behave in the way that our theories suggest.
But you believe that, don't you?
Well, you have to believe the evidence, because that's what we've measured.
You have faith in the fact that it's there.
This is a good question. Sorry, you just talk amongst yourselves over there. I would say, actually, and I'll ask Tony in a moment, but I would say that the absence of a belief system is not a belief system. So science is a system of thought that has no underlying prejudice or bias. Now, that's not to say that scientists don't have belief systems,
no.
But science as a process is the absence of a belief system.
But there are areas of science, and this dark matter issue is an area where you don't know exactly what's happening, so you have a series of beliefs that explain that, which is what...
Theories.
Well, that's what religious people do. They see the world in a particular way, and they explain it by the existence of a supreme being. Isn't there a similarity there?
No, the search here, though, is our best theory says the universe should behave like this, and it doesn't behave like our best theory. So the bit that stops it behaving like our best theory is the missing mass. So we either search for a better theory, which is happening, or we search for the hidden mass, which is happening. It's not a belief system. It's a belief in looking for evidence.
Well, some people, they see in human nature, they see the divine, and they can't explain it. They can't. Well, it may
That's
be, sir. It may indeed. It may indeed be, as you say, sir. Just saying, to cast the idea of believing in something more powerful and bigger than yourself completely out there and saying that's completely wrong and putting those people in the wicker man, when science itself is asking us to believe in things we can't see, touch, feel or smell, I find there's a slight problem there.
I'll go to Sheffy, but I just...
I have to say, I was raised in an atheist household, okay? But I would like to just point out that hundreds and thousands of addicts and alcoholics who haven't been free of their addiction through drugs or therapy, so psychology or medicine, but they do the 12-step program. And the 12-step program is about putting your faith into a higher power. And I've seen atheists in programs like that have years and years and years of abstinence from drugs and alcohol. And if we don't believe that, that's fine. But to shout at people that do is what I'm talking about, extremism and fanaticism.
Can I'm just going to congratulate Shappie for, at the Glastonbury Festival, bringing up the 12-step programme. Never have people been so far away from the 12-step programme.
It is just a way of saying that you're not the centre of the universe, being a selfish idiot. But I'm wondering, can you worship this mass we're talking about? Can you pray to the mass without the danger of becoming a progressive rocker? Which I'd quite like to be. So may I worship it?
And also, aren't you... I mean, it started out being dark matter, and that didn't quite fit. So then you invented dark force. What's next, dark chocolate? Where are you going to go with this dark thing?
No, but this is evidence for dark chocolate. Right?
Thank God.
Definitely evidence.
Thank God. Where would we be without chocolate at Glastonbury?
This is the point to me, though, because the point about science is to explore the unknown. So by definition, you're operating on the edge of the known and the unknown, and that's how you progress. So that's the place that scientists gravitate to. So what I would say about... what I would define as a faith-based position is perhaps the way that you defined it, which is I tend to see an extremist point of view where you just see the unknown and you guess, because essentially that's based on a fear of the unknown, whereas science is a rather different discipline because it's based on going to the place where your knowledge stops. So the key point is that there's no belief there. There's just a recognition that something doesn't fit and therefore an interest in going trying to find out what's happening.
And you always have to test. You always have to test. And all we're doing is continuing to test the boundary. That's all.
Sounds lonely. On the precipice all the time.
But Graham, if we go back to the Beagle 2 landing, because Blur for a time became the band that you hung around with scientists, like you were in Mission Control, weren't you, at the landing? So how was that experience of being the science poster boys for a while?
Oh well, I used to meet these learned people through Alex, our bass player, and Alex was quite obsessed with textbooks, but I preferred painters and decorators because I thought their philosophy on life was a little more to the point. I could get hold of that a little bit more.
So you think painters and decorators are more rational and logical than scientists?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you can't argue with natural calico. It is what it is. That's the colour. But I'll tell you something. What I'm finding really exciting and really interesting with this programme and you guys and the fact that this tent at Glastonbury is rammed is this... This interest of science in science, and I wish it, because it was taught so badly in my school, and I'm very excited that we're now in a sphere where you're a superstar, Professor Brian Cox, and you work with it's great. And also, and he's a comedian, and I think comedians and scientists coming together like that and popularising talking about all this is brilliant. It makes me want to go and kiss tree bark.
Which is a very good cure, actually, for insomnia as well. In fact, later on, because there are so many people here, we're going to divide the audience and play a game of British Bulldog, because so far CERN hasn't come up with the answer in terms of clashing particles, but we believe there are enough people here that if you run fast enough, we will find the matter that made the universe, and that will make Billy very happy. Or just chuck him some chocolate, one or the other, we found out.
Well, Billy, we were talking earlier, actually. You'd said to me that you think, actually, your science teacher may have been good at school, but you had such a lack of interest in it that you kind of...
Yeah, unfortunately, I was the wrong age for physics. We had a great science... Mr. Turner, the Bunsen burner, was a great guy. And he once did we came into a physics... He was a physics teacher. We came into his lesson, and he'd written the lyrics from a Bob Dylan song on the blackboard and proceeded to do the entire lesson based around the lyrics of this song. And I was such a snotty-nosed little 14-year-old, of course, I didn't take any notice of this. And I wish now I had paid attention... not only for the Bob Dylan, but also for the physics, to get an understanding of a little bit more of these things. Like, I'm still baffled whether or not it's true that the water in Australia goes down the plug hole the opposite way, Brian. Does it? You've been there.
It's a very subtle effect. Usually the way it rotates is just the way that you take the plug out, because that overwhelms any small...
Well, surely the water goes down the plug hole in the opposite way to which the Earth is rotating, doesn't it?
No. It's not that simple.
So the deal is, it's all about breaking the symmetry, right? So you have to break the symmetry of the flow, and that's a really important thing to know here, right? Because how many people have pulled their foot out of their wellies by lifting their foot up directly, right? Okay, well, that's because if you lift your foot up directly, you're doing an extensional flow, right? And that the force is three times bigger than if you twist when you're doing a shear flow. So if you want to walk safely in mud, you have to mince. Okay? You got a twist. So I want to see all of you mincing out of here, going, sheer flow is easier than extensional flow.
There you go, you see, physics is about the origin and evolution of the universe, the movement of galaxies, chemistry is about why you mince in mud.
And which one is the most practical currently? As we see you walking through the mud in your socks, cursing, we'll realise you didn't true. Listen to the physical chemistry.
It'd only be to a Land Rover anyway.
So do you think sometimes there is room for mysticism as well as rationalism in terms of getting through your life? Like we were talking before about coping mechanisms, and I quite like it. I'm an atheist as well, but sometimes I watch atheists there drinking heavily and smoking and going, isn't it pathetic? People need a coping mechanism. Oh, we've run out of whiskey. And as I did last night. And
the first person to ever notice that the moon affected the tide was a monk called the Venerable Bede. He was working at Monk
Venerable Weir, Bede fans in the audience.
Yeah. He's playing at the Vortex stage on Sunday night. He didn't get down there. You say Venerable, I say Bede. Venerable. Venerable. Love this show. Anyway, he was a monk and he was trying to work out the proper date for Easter, which you may or may not know, is based on the phases of the moon. And while he was doing it at Monk Wearmouth, he also noticed that when the moon was full, the tide was right up. And when the moon was gone, the tide was right out. And the more he did it, the more he noticed. And eventually, he worked out that actually the moon somehow, he didn't know how, but the moon was having an effect on the tide. So here's a piece of really primal, you know, this is the 7th, 8th century science, based but coming from religious observance. You know, there is that overlap.
Well, yeah, observation of nature.
Yeah.
The heart of science.
But how does that sit with things can only get better? Basically, it says that everything decays, doesn't it, basically?
Things can only get better.
If I understand your fabulous program exactly, it says that everything decays,
doesn't it? Things can only get better is flat wrong. It violates the second law of thermodynamics, and it should never have been written.
Well done, mate. Well done.
To be fair, you didn't write that one, did you? You wrote a song called Things Are Going Downhill All the Way, It's a Disaster, which chart.
Mine was called Entropy Always Increases, but Labour didn't want to use that one. we're heading towards the end of our time, unfortunately, but I want to go around the panel and ask a final question to everybody, which is, because we're here at Glastonbury, this is what I think perhaps the first time that such an event has been held, science in this form. So can science, I'll start with Billy, can science become a regular part of Glastonbury, do you think?
Well,
the people have spoken, Billy, you accept their word.
I think anybody who has used the ablutions here at Glastonbury would hope that science will become... Well, I don't know if you know this, I mean, you may not have read this, but there was a plan to analyse the effluent from Glastonbury this year for traces of drugs. It was in yesterday's paper, but Evis wouldn't allow them to do it because then they'd know why his cows are so hyper-productive.
Tony. So for me, Glastonbury could have never existed without science. There'd be no electric guitars, no amplification, no lights, no chemical toilets. All of those are the benefits of people being scientists and making observations.
That's actually... You've guessed my next show. It's Wonders of the Chemical Toilet. BBC budgets have fallen.
So I'll do that for you.
Chappie.
That was a beautiful answer. I can't top that, other than to say it absolutely has a place in Glastonbury, because, like I said before, just the sheer scale of people in this tent shows that it's something that we're fascinated by and interested in, and it's a beautiful thing. Science is a beautiful thing. And, you know, I only hope this many people come to my show tomorrow at 9:05.
I think there should be lectures. I think there should be... this is great. It's all clean. And I do have about... I collect Harris tweed jackets, so I've got about 30. One would fit you. And I think so long as there's a pipe and a tweed jacket, I'll take it seriously.
Do you think we can do the pyramid stage in 2 years' time in Sweden? Yeah. I think so.
Quantum electrodynamics, a big blackboard, that's all you need. That is a wonderful thing to imagine. Now we have to finish because Brian's actually agreed to go and play keyboards with the Wurzels. But unfortunately it's in 1987, so it does require his wormhole working. Hopefully he'll get there in time. Thank you to Billy Bragg, Shabby Corsandi, Graham Coxon and Tony Ryan.
Now, because this is Glastonbury, we can't end the programme without a song. In my opinion, it's not even in my opinion, it is true, the Apollo moon landings are one of the greatest of all human achievements, one of the few times in history when we did something, as Kennedy said, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. And I've got to say that the main reason my wife married me was she found someone who was almost as obsessed by the Apollo moon landings as she is, and she introduced me to this song. It's one of, I think, a song that expresses the reason we do Infinite Monkey Cage better than any other. This is Billy Bragg with The Space Race Is Over.
When I was young, I told my mom to walk on the moon someday. Armstrong and Aldrin spoke to me from Houston and Cape Kennedy, and I watched the eagle landing on a night when the moon was full. And as it tugged at the tide, I knew that deep inside I too could feel its pull. I lie on my bed and dreamed I walked the sea of tranquility. I knew that someday soon we'd all sail to the moon on the high tide of technology. But the dreams have all been taken and the window seats taken too. And 2001 already been and gone, what am I supposed to do? Now that the space race is over, it's been and it's gone, and I'll never get to the moon. Now that the space race is over, and I can't help but feel that we've all grown up too soon. And my wings are tattered too, and I can still fly, but not half as high as once I wanted to. Now that the space race is over, it's been and it's gone, and I'll never get to the moon. Now that the space race is over, and I can't help but feel I've grown up too soon. My son and I stand beneath the great night sky. We gaze up in wonder. I tell him the tale of Apollo. He says, "Tell me the truth, Dad. Why did they ever go?" It may look like some empty gesture to go all that way just to come back, but don't offer me a place out inside of space, 'cause where in the hell's that at? Now that the space race is over, it's been and it's gone, and I'll never get out of my room. Now that the space race is over, and I can't help but feel that we're all just going nowhere.
If you've enjoyed this programme, you might like to try other Radio 4 podcasts, including Start the Week, lively discussions chaired by Andrew Marr, and a weekly highlight from Radio 4's evening arts programme, Front Row. To find out more, visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.